Welcome to the Thriving Birth Worker Podcast, a space for conversations about how you, the birth worker, can create not only a fulfilling and sustainable career, but a joyful and thriving life. I'm Erin Underwood, an educator, movement specialist, mother of four boys, and a total anatomy nerd. My passion is to see birth workers encouraged, supported, and empowered in their careers and life. Hello, friends. Oh, wow, it has been quite a few weeks. If you're listening to this podcast later, I'm releasing this episode in March of 2020, which means we are in the middle of dealing with the COVID-19, the coronavirus. And many of us are practicing social distancing from unnecessary social interactions, or we're in quarantine. Many schools are closed. Many restaurants are now closing. If we teach group classes of any kind, those are canceled. And as birth workers, many doulas and lactation consultants are trying to work with hospital policies to support their clients. A lot of us are discouraged around how deeply their businesses and the economy is being impacted. So I want to pause and I want to acknowledge that there are a lot of really big things that are happening that are completely outside of our control, that are really, it can be scary, it can be overwhelming, it can cause a lot of anxiety inside of us. But today I want to also talk about some things that are inside of our control, some things that we can look straight in the face and process that we can do internally that can set us up for success when we come out the other side of this whole world situation. So we are moving into a thriving business series on the podcast. I love a good theme. And the next few interviews are going to be targeting business, strategy, finances, social media, all kinds of good stuff. So many of us find that our trainings that we do when we are now released into this business world, we feel ill-equipped and overwhelmed. So wait, hold on. Not only do I need to know how to serve my clients as a birth worker with amazing just wisdom and understanding, now I need to be an expert in marketing, in finances, in taxes, in social media, in web development. There are just so many aspects to being an entrepreneur and running your own business. It's enough to make someone just throw in the towel from overwhelm. So this series is digging straight into aspects of business, talking to professionals who not only have made it successfully, but also share their deep wisdom and experience with us. So it's been a really fun series of interviews to do, and I am thrilled to share it with you. So today's topic is quite timely, and I didn't plan it. This topic has been scheduled for several months to release now, and it's just so relevant to what we're going on and what we're processing with in our businesses. We're going to talk about the very foundation of business. It's money. So wow, what is even just that word surface in you? That one word, it has so much power to emote so much emotion. So very few things bring about the emotions and the conflicting beliefs that we have like money does. And yet this is what defines a business, doing something in exchange for money. And to continue to provide the service and the product that you have, you need to be able to do that with a profit. And yet so many of us got into this work with such a big and empathic heart. There can sometimes be guilt or shame at knowing how to charge, what to charge, when to charge for your services, advice, time, and expertise. It's such a deep and sticky subject. So that is why I asked the amazing Agnes Kolesky to come onto the show and talk to us about money mindset. So Agnes has been over 15 years in this world with so much experience of studying patterns and alignment in people. She was originally a therapist. She has studied thousands of behavioral patterns that she has used to develop her unique method to money mindset coaching. Her process is threefold. She helps you to examine your conscious and unconscious design, your subconscious programming, and your conditioning around self-worth. She can then partner with you to bring you into alignment with your true authentic self that knows how to prosper authentically. So her unique method to money mindset, using that, she has coached entrepreneurs, real estate agents, healers, artists, actors, and many other service providers to break through income ceilings and to create new money realities for themselves. Agnes is a powerhouse that combines smarts with kindness, wisdom and understanding with truth, experience and relatability without excuses. This conversation is so powerful all the way to the very end. And so without further ado, here is my conversation with Agnes, all about money. Agnes, I am so thrilled to have this conversation with you today. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Erin. I'm excited too.
I am really excited about today's topic, mostly because I think it brings up so much emotion for almost everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of awkwardness around money and how do you talk about it? And we'll get into mindset stuff first, but I was just curious, how did you land in this field as far as where, can you just share a little bit of your story and your background and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was a little child, money has always been a factor in my life. It's always been something I was aware of. My parents are immigrants to Canada. And so I was always sort of aware of class and money stuff. And it was certainly part of the picture, as to what we could do, what we could afford to do, what we couldn't afford to do. And that my parents were stressed out about it a lot of the time. So that's kind of my money story in a nutshell, was very much the hardworking, save all your money, but also like it's on a pedestal and we're never gonna, you know, get to that level. So really, really manage what you have really, really well. So the money story I grew up with, set me up for life in a lot of ways until I started unpacking it. I became a therapist, was always called to work with people, to, you know, help people emotionally, help them heal. That was always a calling. So I went to therapy school and worked for various non-for-profits, always sort of in the not-for-profit space, even though, you know, therapists are entitled to make money. everything I chose had an element of not being entitled to it. Mm. So that came, you know, to a head at a certain point in my late 20s, early 30s, when I started having kids and money became a bigger issue. You know, what I had and what I had to share with my family became a bigger issue. And I started asking myself questions about why I was only making this amount, why I couldn't seem to never get past $40,000 or $50,000 a year, because I had really happy clients and I was helping people do great work. And I really loved my work, and somehow it was never paying off, no matter how much I improved myself and whatever certifications I got. It didn't seem to matter whether my level of experience increased or not. I was stuck at a certain set point and I wanted to understand why. So I went on a journey into money mindset and what actually was going on for me with my money story, with my money identity, and with my relationship to money. And I really fell in love with the work and was like, oh my gosh, everyone needs to work on the relationship with money because it really can change your life. And then once I started making six figures, I started teaching how to make six figures to service providers, entrepreneurs, healers, and people in the service industry.
That's amazing. I love your story.
So that's in a nutshell.
That's, yes, of course. I love it though. And I think you're such a unique voice in this area because of your experience with as being a therapist. Mm-hmm. As far as being that empathic, a listener wanting to, you got into the game because you wanted to help people. You didn't get into the game to necessarily, you know, be a guru type mm-hmm. of personality. Yeah. And I think sometimes a lot of the voices that we hear around money mindset is that very, you know, guru type mentality. And I love your approach as far as, really working on your own relationship with money, but you're not positioning yourself as like
the guru.
Yeah, for sure. Because it's an ongoing relationship. You know, it really is something that I continue to work with. And in the last year, really have really started thinking of money as our medicine, like how it shows up for you, how it shows up in your life, much like some people will have this take on illness or on other stuff, that it's really your medicine. It's really here to teach you something. And I truly do believe that.
That's awesome. So I thought we could just start with, before we get into more specifics, as far as talking about birth workers and maybe some of the things that come up, is just that initial general, we're so uncomfortable talking about this topic. Like, there's so much emotion and backstory. And while all of us have our own specific story and our own specific relationship with money in general, what are the general, like, outside of, you know, the one story where your dad said this one thing or whatever, like in general, culturally, why do you think this is so uncomfortable for us?
I mean, I think if you look at the history of money, you'll discover why, right? It's not a clean relationship in so many ways, like in any history, in any, you know, culture there, it's not clean. It's there. It is a mysterious energy, right? It has like mystery to it. It has stigma to it. You know, any kind of religious stuff that's attached to it. It's really steeped in a lot of power and powerlessness. So what we do is we stay away from it. We avoid it. Even though it's something that we interact with multiple times a day, usually. It's such a prevalent relationship for us, and yet we really stay away from it because there is so much stigma. There's if you just put a, you know, $20 bill in front of yourself and you let your unconscious speak, and you know, you just journal, like, what do I think about $20? You could probably write for at least 2 hours what you think about that.
Mm-hmm.
What it means to you, what it means to your family, what it means to your ancestry, whether you had it or not had it. It certainly is the victim of our projections. And we live in capitalism, mm-hmm. right? So we're kind of bound to this relationship. So we've got to find a way to make it work because we live in this construct. So we have to find a way for it to be palatable for us and maybe even enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so true as far as avoiding it. You can't avoid it. Like, you can only stuff it for so long, but it will manifest in some way, shape in your own life.
Yeah.
When you are processing with workers who are more empathic, so whether they're birth workers or therapists or however, healers of some kind, and they have that strong empathic, like wanting to serve the world, wanting to better the world, wanting to see people who might not have access to some of their, whatever they provide, and that struggle between wanting to price your work at a rate that makes your life livable, mm-hmm. whatever that means for you, but then also wanting to juggle that tension between, but I want to serve everyone. Mm-hmm. How do you just initially start processing? Like, what are some like beliefs or foundational things that you start on the journey or questions that you ask when you're like just starting to broach this subject?
Yeah. You know, I think that a big paradigm shift is understanding that if you're giving from a place that you don't have, you are undergiving. You cannot fully give of your gifts if you're coming from a place of depletion. And it's rare that someone who's overgiving is not depleted or exhausted or giving, you know, pulling blood from a stone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really have to look at what it is that you're giving, right? Because you can't fully give of your gifts unless you are in overflow. That's when you get to give of your gifts fully, right? When you're in that place of overflow, and that's one of the big shifts I came to understand was like, I can't really give unless I'm taken care of. And if I'm not thinking about my future self, if I'm not thinking about my retirement or my healthcare or what I need in my life to be okay, then I am undergiving. Then and most of us have accepted a low level of stress around these things, especially people who live in America, right? Around healthcare and insurance and things that are not provided. There's just a acceptance around that, that you should have to live with that stress. So one of those paradigm shifts is starting to think about things like your future self. Starting to think about, am I really giving of my gift if I'm constantly coming from a place of depletion, of exhaustion? Am I truly serving? And what's the quality that I'm able to serve at? So that's a good sort of question to start looking at in terms of, what your part is in the money puzzle and in pricing and in charging. Because when you're in overflow, you can serve a lot more people sometimes, because then you have space, you have time, or you can even have scholarships, or you can have opportunities to give fully. Whereas if you're giving from a place of that guilt, I would also look at, how is the guilt serving you, right? Like, how is the guilt, and is it really good to give from a place of guilt?
Mm-hmm.
Which might be a more confronting thing to look at. You know, I feel bad. Okay, well, go a little deeper with that. You know, how is that protecting you? How is that keeping you busy in ways so that you can avoid other things? So that you can, because if we're on some level modeling for our clients good care and good, we're an example, right? Pricing and how we take care of ourselves is one of those ways that we're modeling for people. So it's an interesting question, maybe a confronting one to look at. How is that guilt serving you? And how is it maybe, and not always, right? But sometimes, how is it a way that it's allowing you to be selfish and allowing you to be the martyr? And this isn't the case for everybody, and I'm not judging everyone who's listening. But it is a common thing that comes up with overgivers and people in the healing services and wellness services, is how is that allowing me to be selfish? Because then I get to keep hiding, or I get to be in a comfort zone, or I get to not shine my brightest light, or I get to be, exhausted and depleted and not taking care of myself, which feeds me in some way. Even though it's not consciously good, it's happening unconsciously, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would take a look at like conscious versus unconscious choices. Am I doing it in the moment when my emotions are high and someone's asking me, and I'm not, there's a saying that says when emotions are high, intelligence is low.
Mm.
Am I making these pricing decisions? Am I making business decisions when emotions are high?
That's really good.
When I'm not rested, when I'm not thinking straight, when I'm making emotional decisions, or am I waiting and making an intelligent decision once the emotion has passed, right? Because it's a long-term relationship for a lot of people in this type of service that, then you're like hauling around for a few months that you might have not made in good conscience.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really good. And I think it's so good to, the conscious versus the unconscious is so powerful, because there's so much unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think also because we avoid the subject and avoid thinking about it. So it's got to go somewhere. And I do think, another question that's really important to ask is, because I think there's this connection between the cup being over, to the service from overflow. But somehow we think that doesn't apply to money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to be emotionally filled, or I want to, continue my education, or I want to, take a nap, or like we see all those other areas of like embracing, like I do understand that I can only serve from the overflow. But when it comes to money, I think sometimes it's just this projection of it's selfish to have an overflow there, because
right.
How can, yeah.
Well, I forget who said this, but it really struck me when I heard it. And it always comes up in these kinds of conversations. But the saying is, someone who doesn't want $1 million has never given $1 million away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just that experience of giving, like the more you have, the more you can give, is a really special one and can really counter the guilt or the resistance to looking at making more money, because it is, it does make you vulnerable, right? To have to put yourself out there. And sometimes when we don't have the experience of like being able to give away more, being able to see our money do something, we're really disconnected from it. So we don't know what's possible. But we definitely don't want to throw our hat in the ring of vulnerability because that seems too scary. But often that's where opportunity lies, right? Expansion, opportunity, being able to help more people in ways that you never imagined. So yeah, I think it's worth considering, like, you know, or just playing or daydreaming. Well, what if I did make, you know, six figures? What would I be able to do? Would I be able to open, you know, a free aspect to my business that would really help serve people that don't have it? And then I would be, you know, but I would be charging people who could afford it. There's all kinds of ways to do it, right? But yeah, this idea of selfishness and self-righteousness play together in the realm of money too. Like, what's, you know, what's good money and what's bad money, and what's the right price and what's an ethical price and what's not an ethical price. And there's a lot of judgment and a lot of, you know, a lot of disagreement that can happen just within yourself that you have to take a look at. Because if you don't, it ends up sort of manifesting externally. and it comes at you as a lesson as opposed to something that you work on consciously.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just love that approach and just the willingness to, like you said, it's a very vulnerable place to mm-hmm. dig into, okay, what do I really believe, and asking myself the hard questions rather than just brushing it off like we've always done. Mm-hmm. And to me, I think there's just a lot of power in being okay with being uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
and then just kind of sitting in that place and seeing what comes to you. Like you said, with the journal practice of like setting the $20 bill in front of you and being like, I'm going to sit here in this space and like just be and let the unconscious, the subconscious, like kind of come to the surface, and knowing that the subconscious does filter our ability to serve. Cause I think sometimes mm-hmm. we just think we can trick ourselves into like, if it's unconscious, if I shove it aside, like I can
right.
somehow it won't impact me or my, you know, my service or my clients or whoever I'm trying to pour out to mm-hmm. and realizing that like the filter's clogged.
Yeah.
And yeah. if I can just get comfortable with like, okay, I'm going to start unclogging this filter so that, you know, things can flow from my heart mm-hmm. rather than somehow like trying to bypass this subconscious uncomfortable that I'm just would rather not talk about.
Oh, I think that's a really great analogy, is of the filter and having it, because it really is about going both ways. And if we're just giving, then like we're not developing our ability to receive. And then things become one-sided and then they become unconscious and then they manifest in like you losing money. Are you getting hit with bills that you didn't expect, right? Because it's trying to force us open to look at the duality. And money is dual. Money can be used mm-hmm. for good. Money can be used for bad. It's not that it's all things that we project on it, right? It's just like we are dual. We have selfless desires and we have selfish desires. We do. And not admitting that or not owning up to that, doesn't make you better or worse. You know what I mean? Like it just makes you know yourself less. And in such an intimate, you know, experience as therapist or birth worker or any kind of wellness provider, like the more honest you are, the deeper you're going to be able to connect with people, which is ultimately, I think, what you're looking for.
Yeah, for sure. And there is an element of processing this tool because it's a powerful tool. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it can be used for good, it can be used for evil, and like, exponentially on both ends. And I think there's an element of having to do your own work and be vulnerable to trust yourself with it. Mm-hmm. I think there can sometimes be this lack of trust of like, if I get this powerful tool, mm-hmm. I haven't seen the exponential side of the good. I've seen it on the negative side. And so I'm scared that I'll go that same route. And a lot of that I probably is subconscious, mm-hmm. but also doing that work of like, okay, if I had a really powerful tool, could I trust myself with it?
Yeah, I think that's a really great point because one of the evidence that we see externally that's, in the headlines very often is like how people abuse power and how they abuse money. And we're not looking for, the occasional like Ellen video, where she's like giving someone a bunch of money for just, whatever they're doing in life. Or helping people out. So we're not necessarily looking for positive evidence of how it works in the good. So that's one thing you can start adding to your, agenda is like, look for the good. The other piece of this is that we gather evidence in not trusting ourselves with money, bad investments, bad purchases, us not really being conscious or us not closing up our financial mistakes and then holding them against ourselves forever and ever. And so then your brain creates this evidence of like, well, even if you get more money, you don't know how to manage it because you did X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the point of getting more if you can't manage it anyway? You're just going to spend it, or you're just going to get into debt, or you're just going to do whatever, right? So this lack of trusting ourselves then gets also projected onto money. And like, why would you want more to manage? It's just more headache.
Yes, it's so true. And just even like knowing neurologically, like the brain is hardwired to look for the negative.
Mm-hmm.
It is hardwired to look for things that it sees as, threatening. And so, and I think, I don't remember the exact statistic, but they say like, it basically takes like 10 positives to undo one negative. Mm. And so I just made that up, but it's something big like that, where it's really awesome and powerful, but I don't remember the exact number, but it takes quite a few positive experiences to basically rewire the brain against a negative. And I've heard this like related to parenting as far as like, it's really important to, the positive affirmations over ourselves, over our kids. But then also when it comes to money, we are like acknowledging like my brain is hardwired to look for these negative experiences, whether it be in the media or my own experiences or my own choices. And they're going to be glaringly obvious. And yet, really slowing down and being like, watching Ellen, like it's so powerful what you said. I love that example because she's such a beautiful example of just empowerment and love and just, the positivity that our brain needs. And I think that's why so many people connect with her, because it's like our brain is starved for that, like positivity. Mm-hmm. And I think to be able to bring that into our perspective of money, of I will start looking for positive examples around people using money for good.
Right. Exactly. And even further, if it's around your business and around your pricing and around what you're charging, rewarding yourself every time you ask, every time you move your rates up, whether you get a yes or a no is kind of irrelevant. Celebrating the fact that you are trying to change something and having it be, like you said, like a 10 to 1. Well, if you ask 10 times, maybe the 11th time you're going to get a yes, and not giving up after once, because that's just your resistance, quite possibly. It might have nothing to do with your audience, mm-hmm. right? It might be you holding and kind of freaking out about the price. But if you're not surviving with what you're doing and you're continually putting yourself in that cycle of, or not thriving, maybe you're surviving, but you're not thriving. And you keep putting yourself in that sort of punitive cycle. It's also like people burn out for that reason. They can't keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is what we're seeing a lot of in the birth community is people reaching that position, that place of burnout, because they are giving and giving and giving. And it is not from that place of overflow and from a lot of different realms. And so that's one of the reasons why I was super excited to have you, you know, to do this conversation for our listeners. And because it's really, I love challenging conversations where it forces us to think. Like, I'm totally comfortable with getting uncomfortable. And I think that's where healing and growth can happen. Like, if you see, one of my favorite sayings is like, you can't have music without tension. Mm. Like, there's so much beauty that can be created when we allow that tension, you know, a healthy amount.
Yeah.
You know, break piano strings and all of that. But like, there's a healthy amount of tension where then the music can flow. And so, yeah, this type of conversation of like, oh, money, it's so uncomfortable, but like, it's okay to be uncomfortable because that's where the growth and the beauty can happen. And so I think it's really powerful when we get uncomfortable around like, okay, how am I setting my pricing and what's driving this? And rather than just making assumptions, but really sitting down and saying, what are my fears? Because fear is never a good motivator. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes, I think a lot of the times, pricing is set around fear and around this perception of lack,
yeah,
and wanting to somehow fill in that gap. And when we can come from that place of overflow rather than the perception of lack, it just completely changes the lens of what you're looking through.
Well, 100%. And I think also the other thing that bears sort of attention is that no matter if it's the wellness industry or the healing industry or the birth industry, you're still in a business. And I'm not sure what the setup is around birth workers specifically and what kind of like business setup they get in terms of like their training, but it's a business, right? You're taking money for a service. It's a business. And oftentimes, like, we get 10 years down the road before we realize we're in a business and we need to keep for taxes and we need to roll that into our pricing and that no one's paying for, you know, the hours and years of experience that we have. And we have to roll that in and that if we treated it like a business, we would have a really different experience and it wouldn't necessarily feel so personal, which, you know, is sometimes.
Yes. And that's true.
Yeah, which is sometimes a thing that makes it messy is it feels like it's just you and it's not the business has got to run. Like, that shop's going to be open, you know, every day and people expect to be able to walk in and buy it, which means, you know, it has to run like a business. So educating yourself around, you know, business stuff, accounting stuff, is helpful and empowering because it does make it a bit less personal. You know, and it does make it like less muddy in terms of like boundaries and expectations. And would you expect that kind of flexibility from any other business owner? Probably not, right? The kind that you're giving. So I think it would also extend into thinking about that. Like, have you thought about it really as a business as opposed to just something that you do and the work that you do? How does it feel differently when it's in the context of something like a business?
Absolutely. And I obviously don't have a pulse on every single training, but I have heard a lot of doulas and some midwives where they get all their training and then they're doing the solopreneur thing and they haven't had the business training. And it has been basically presented in a way that their work is a service, not a business. And then I hear a lot of fear around like, oh, but I don't know how to do accounting. I don't know how to do, it's just so overwhelming to me. I don't do that type of thing. And like, I just want to say, if you can catch a baby, like, you can handle the accounting. Like, trust me, like, kind of talking yourself up a little bit of like, if I can help people, if I can help them deliver, like, bring life into the world, which is incredible. Like, I believe in myself. Like, yeah, it might be hard. It might not come naturally to me, but I can figure out the tools and I can figure out a system where I am empowered to run this like a business.
Well, and you might be surprised, but like, or listeners might be surprised that when you do that, it's a lot easier for people to invest in you because it doesn't seem just like, here today, gone tomorrow. It's a business. It'll be here today. It'll be here tomorrow. It'll be here 5 years from now. This is how it works. Here's the rules. Here's the expectations. Here's the costs. Right. And when people mm-hmm. don't have clean boundaries around stuff, it can sometimes be harder for people to invest because they're not sure. And that's just an energetic thing. They're like, well, they seem like a great person, but is this legit? Can I count on them? What if they get sick? Who's going to, all kinds of things can come up when you don't have a solid container for that service. And just energetically, people that can be a match that doesn't get made because people are like feeling around. They might go with someone who just has a, might not be like as energetically connected heart to heart, but has a solid container that they feel like, bloop, I have no problem putting my money in there because it feels solid.
Absolutely. And
yeah, it's really hard being a solopreneur. It's really hard being out there and absolutely get into communities of support around this because it is lonely. You're tired. You work crazy hours and you're alone most of the time. So absolutely you need support around this. I think it's an essential part for any kind of service industry provider.
For sure. Yeah. And yeah, just what you were saying as far as like boundaries instill confidence in people. Like mm-hmm. when you have very clear, this is yes, this is no, this is what I can do, this is what I can't do, this is what it costs. And speaking it with confidence mm-hmm. instills confidence in your clients because they're like, okay, like she's got this. Like mm-hmm. she's really confident in her services. She knows her value. She knows what she can do and what she can't do. And it just energy, like you said, the energy totally shifts when we can walk in that way. Yeah. And also what you're saying about community, it's also super important because there is that balance of with a solopreneur, you feel like you have to be an expert at everything. Like I have to be my marketer. I have to be social media. I have to be my own accountant. I have to do like all the things. And like, I get it. It is a lot. And so finding your tribe and finding different people who maybe have different skills and can speak that life into you or like tricks or yes. people that they follow who like really simplify it or tools that they use is super powerful.
100%. And thinking about it long term, because the emotional side of us will be very in the moment and very not planning and not looking forward. And then before we know it, a lot of time has passed and we're not where we want to be financially or otherwise in terms of our business growth. So looking at like, what's my long term? And often I see this, with healers and service providers, and this was definitely my story too, that I refused to look to the future. And it was like, what am I going to do this year? Because there was this depletion always that I was trying to fix. And it really had to change. I had to look at, if I believe that this business is what I do and what I'm always going to do, then how would I approach this differently? Would I be in such a rush? Would I be trying to be so cheap all the time? Would I be, not investing in the things that are going to add to my business growth, like more clients, right? Looking at the long term and letting yourself off the timeline that it has to happen, in the next 3 months or 6 months or year. A successful business needs to be in business for at least 5 years, right? Just to be mm-hmm. In the game. So start thinking a little bit long term. That's better self-care in terms of you and your business also.
It's so good. So we were talking about having, seeing the power of good. And I know you have a ton of testimonials. I'm kind of putting on the spot here, but I was wondering if one or two, like specifically around maybe a healer or someone who is, gravitating more towards the empath and wanting to serve. But mm-hmm. do you have any stories of people who have done the work and you've seen them really use their service for good?
Yeah. So one of my clients, long-term clients is, in the movement space, and she has now helped like tens of thousands of women with the pelvic floor stuff. I have a couple of women in that space, and two of them have really changed thousands of lives, thousands and thousands of women's lives, who have healed their pelvic floor stuff, but they had to get over themselves. They had to get over their humility. They had to get over their desire to show up, you know, because that's one of the big things that blocks people is the visibility thing, like not wanting to be too visible and not having to show up. And that's, you know, part of the game, you know, and they decided to go all in on the game. And I think those are the clients that are the most successful, the ones that are willing to play the game to the fullest. And they understand that it is that, right? That it is, that there is a sort of game aspect to money and to business and to life. Because when we get too serious, it becomes too hard. It becomes too hard. It becomes too personal. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to do it anymore. So they really went from like, you know, very little followers, like yoga classes in their home, to like thousands and thousands of followers and like multiple, like $500,000 businesses. So that was a few years in the making. It didn't happen overnight, but they never stopped. They never stopped. They kept growing and they failed a lot. They were willing to fail a lot, you know, and they were willing to try and look at every failure as a lesson in terms of the money and the investments, because it takes time. It takes time to find your niche. It takes time to find your voice, you know, and mm-hmm. they were willing to do that. And now they are like, very prominent voices in the movement field. So I would say
for sure.
Yeah. And I've had a client who continues to be my client, who's also a few years in with me, who is a shaman. Which is not something notoriously that you think about making money from. But she does. She now coaches executives at Microsoft, as well as like stay home moms, you know, like mm-hmm. everyone in between. But she, you know, she went through really challenging times about like whether this thing that she does would be accepted and people would pay money for it. You know, and she would even like, she had great write-ups in papers, and then she would get all these people saying like, are you crazy? This sounds cuckoo and wild, and who would pay for this? And da 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 da. So mm-hmm. she had to be willing to face some of the haters. That was part of her journey. So that she could serve on that really big level, so that she could give back, you know, on the scale that she likes to. She now has a retreat center, you know, opening this year, which, you know, 5 years ago was a dream and was like non-existent. And now she can offer that to all sorts of people.
Just full circle, like how yeah. we connected was actually through one of the women that you coach. And if you hadn't been, you know, working with her and she hadn't done the work of leaning into it, like my own personal healing journey, like I was one of the thousands that she's impacted. And I was in that really dark place of feeling really stuck, feeling really broken, my pelvic floor, diastasis, the whole thing. And if she hadn't been super brave and put herself out there, I mean, I'm not saying there weren't any other tools, but I tried a lot and they hadn't worked. And she's amazing that I was able to do the work through her and get my own healing. So like through her healing and through her putting herself out there. And also, you know, the psychology of like, she put a price tag on her worth and I paid for it mm-hmm. and I had a budget and made it happen. But then I valued what she put out there and yeah. I stuck with it. Yeah. So that I could actually see my healing. And I think if I'd paid like $20, I don't know that I would have yeah. stuck with it and actually mm-hmm. seen the results. So it's just so cool to see the full circle of like, she did her work and then I was able to get my healing along with like thousands of other women. And so I just think it's super impactful. So part of it is like, thank you for coaching all these people to step into their power and their service. Because then like so many other people are so deeply impacted mm-hmm. and it's just such a beautiful thing when we sit with things that are uncomfortable and then we go for it anyway. And like you said, we stick with it long term, then just, we don't know the impact that we're going to have. Like we mm-hmm. can't fully see it, you know, 5 years, you know, into the future, like we can have these dreams and then they happen. It's just so beautiful.
Oh, well, thank you for sharing that. I love that. And I'm just blessed to have had the opportunity, you know, to co-create and co-collaborate. And yeah, you're right. It was because they put themselves out there. And the reality is it doesn't have to be the same way for everybody. You don't have to have thousands of followers. You can have 20 really high-end clients every year, you know, mm-hmm. and you could impact those few people. Knowing how you're designed is also important to how you build your business or your following or your impact. Knowing how you're designed, different from sort of resistance to what you would like to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because it's not the same path for everybody. Everybody has a different path. And support was a big part of that puzzle for those people named as well. So remembering that we just, you know, we rise faster together. So collaborate with other people in your field, like do stuff together. You do get there faster.
For sure. So for those of our listeners who are getting real excited about the subject and they're kind of getting stirred on, I want to kind of dig into maybe my own stuff. What kind of resources do you have available as far as working with people? Or I know you have a course. So can you just tell us a little bit about our options?
Yeah, for sure. So all my stuff is available at agneskowalski.com. You can go peruse. There's some great articles. There's some great free resources like the 10 Cash Commandments and starting to do that journaling work. There's a journaling prompt course that's like $31 that you can start to, you know, get these wheels turning. And then there's my course that's Permission to Prosper that is like a foundational course around money and money mindset. So that's available anytime. And then I have mindset pods if you want to work live with me, which I highly recommend. It's, you know, the funnest way to work with me because it's live. So every couple months, I do a 6-week program that really deep dives into mindset issues around money, success, visibility, and all the stuff you need to create, you know, the life that you desire and the wealth that you desire. So those are really, really fun. And they happen every couple months. And if you just sign up to my email list, you'll be informed the next time they are around. But there's also besides me, there's like other really great resources. Just start listening to stuff on money and wealth building. And if you really want to get excited about money, start listening about like what compound interest is, you know, like start getting excited about the idea of money working for you, because so much of what we do is like, you know, translated into time. And this is your life force you're exchanging. And you want to create some things that don't require your life force, because we have a limited amount in this lifetime. And we want to spend it creating memories, not just of hard work, but of things that we're enjoying, time with our families and time with our friends and loved ones. So just start listening to everything wealth, like bombard your consciousness with it, and it will start to draw it to itself, right? Tapping into Wealth is a great book by Margaret Lynch that I highly recommend. That's kind of like a crash course in looking at your biggest sort of money triggers.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much for your time and for your service. And I am personally so grateful for you because of our own connection. And so thank you so much for just being you and for pushing all of us to be more authentically ourselves without being motivated by fear or filters or driving by the subconsciousness that we maybe might not want to deal with.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Erin. It's such an honor. And thank you guys for listening. Any questions, just pop into any of my social handles and I'd be happy to chat with you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
She delivered, right? Quite honestly, this episode is one you might want to go back to and listen to again after you've had some time to digest the first layer to dig in a little deeper. She digs right down into the heart of the matter, which is what we're after, right? Serving our clients with our true, authentic hearts free of fear. I personally think that's part of living a thriving life. If you want to connect with Agnes, which I really hope you do, head on over to her website and her social media. She's often doing little Facebook lives and chats about powerful questions to help you dig deeper into your truth and understanding your own heart and motivations. If this topic is uncomfortable for you, like it is for many of us, you'll be so served by her, because if you're in business and if you want to keep serving your clients well out of your overflow, this is a vital piece of the puzzle. If you're one of the folks who are practicing social distancing or you're in quarantine and you're wanting to move your body without special equipment from home, I've created two free 10-minute workouts for you. They target building strength in the back and the upper body and combating pain in those areas, which for some of us, our tension can settle there. All the information can be found in the show notes under today's podcast, episode 18. Thank you so much for doing what you do, for how you serve, for being willing to sit with the discomfort to live an authentic and thriving life, which the world needs. I'm cheering you on as we navigate all of this together. Bye for now.
The information and discussion provided on this podcast are not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. If you have a medical concern, you should consult with an appropriately licensed physician or healthcare provider.